This is an interview with Mr. Marshall Jones, Jr. for the McKeld and Jackson Project at the Maryland Historical Society on Thursday, January the 29th, 1976. The interview is taking place at Marshall W. Jones, Jr. Funeral Home in Baltimore. The interviewer is Brenda McCauley. Mr. Jones, would you tell me when you first met Mr. McKeld?
I first met the governor many years ago, in the late 50s. And I believe I was with my father when I met him, because my father and Governor McKeld were very good personal friends. And I got to know him very well. And our friendship continued on through many years until his death.
Did you regard a Mr. McKeld as a truly sincere advocate of civil rights and equality?
No. Mr. McKeld set a moral tone that in Maryland we have had no one to come close. Even today, we have no moral leadership in the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, that even comes close to the government. He just believed in the brotherhood of man under the fatherhood of God. He was a man's man, he was a leader's leader, he was a great, great human being. He loved everybody and he showed it. And there was nothing in his life that would demonstrate anything less than giving a moral tone that was first class. Heads and shoulders above the crowd. Even today, we just don't have a Theodore McKeld, not even in the wings. He was just a great person. Great person.
In what capacity did you work with Mr. McKeld, and would you tell me how you became involved in that position?
Well, I worked with him initially in his campaign, 1963, when he won the second term as mayor of the city of Baltimore. That year he ran when everyone said that his opponent was going to defeat him. They said that he had done a great job, he was a great man, but this was not his year. He was a Republican running in a Democratic city, and he could not win. The Afro-American editorial stated that this is not the year for McKeld. In spite of all that, we supported him because of the leadership, the moral leadership that he had given this town, the kind of person he was. And whether he won or lost, it really didn't matter. We were supporting a man that was a good man, a man who was a leader, a man who was a great humanitarian. Of course, the voters decided that he was the better man. And of course, he was elected in 63. I worked with him as part of his administration. I was appointed to the Community Relations Commission in 63. And in 65 or 64, I was appointed to the Bureau of Parks and Recreation, serve on its board. And in 65, I was appointed to the Board of Supervisors of Elections, being the first black appointed to any election board in the state of Maryland. So I worked to help his program while he was in City Hall. And through the years, we have worked with him on community projects, projects that were helpful to the community. And anytime we could give support, we were right there with him.
Did you see where Theodore McKeld's own beliefs about equality and civil rights might have changed some of the attitudes of his white staffers and assistants that you ran into in City Hall?
Well, City Hall is an interesting place. Most people at City Hall are under a merit system. They're there, they have tenure, and mayors come and go, and staff people kind of stay around. Now, his close staff certainly reflected his own thinking, his own personality. And so it was a continuation or an extension of the McKeld. But as far as City Hall itself, as far as the governmental processes, they continue to roll on in their own conservative manner. Obstacles that are placed in front of a mayor when he's trying to improve a city are built-in obstacles. Civil Service Commission, built-in problems. You had some legal problems, all kind of problems that we now call institutional problems. They say institutional racism. It's built into the system, and a mayor gives the moral tone to change. He gives the moral tone to change, and because of his presence, things were improved because he created the atmosphere for improvement. That does not mean that bigoted department heads who had tenure did not continue their own ways. But at least they were mellowed quite a bit while he was in office. The city councilmen that he had to deal with on a day-to-day basis, they didn't change their basic philosophies. Of course, they went along with him if he wanted something done, and they saw it was some benefit to their constituency in the area. So he kept the atmosphere conducive to black and white working together for progress. This kind of atmosphere that he created, we haven't seen since. It's just not there. His whole life, his whole personality, lent itself to people working together and being brothers. And this feeling of closeness, this is the kind of person he was. He was just a great person.
In the late 1950s, when he was speaking at Morgan, Mr. McKeldin made the statement that the progress of America's black population would be like a bellwether for all of the colored people of the world. He said that how well blacks progressed in this country would set the stage for the economic advancement of colored people everywhere, and I want your response to that.
I agree with that particular statement to the degree that all persons of color look toward the United States as a world leader. It looks at the treatment of the blacks. So as we progress economically and politically and socially in this country, then the carryover is how the United States government view emerging countries in Africa and Asia. And I think that's fine. What do you say to that particular time? Of course, as you know, McKelvin has gone off the scene, and our progress as blacks in America economically has been slowed because of the entire country economically. And we find in foreign countries today, you have less capitalism, but the economic powers of the world still continue to create upheavals because of the, you know, basic natural resources that are in those countries. We still, as Americans, want to keep the economics and keep the money flowing our particular way. To make this, I guess, more concise, as our progress seems to level off, it appears on the rising now that some of the emerging countries are try to be hampered by the world powers, including the United States of America.
Do you remember the events surrounding the 1954 Supreme Court decision? How do you feel that McKeldin's own attitude toward the decision as governor affected events in Maryland and Baltimore especially?
Oh yes, specifically in Baltimore. Baltimore had been working toward integration of its schools, particularly in the staff level. And when the transition came, it was not as traumatic as it was in some other areas because of his leadership.
Then you feel that McKeldin was personally responsible for the lack of trouble here?
I believe that he created the atmosphere so that you had less possibilities of confrontation because of his own dynamic personality. you could go back and talk about the days he was the governor, when at the state office building, they had the black employees eating in a different cafeteria than white employees. He said, no, that will not be. And just by, you know, writing a statement, it was cleared up right away. He continued, you know, his governor and his mayor to make it possible for change to come about without violent confrontation. So because of his leadership, yes. If you want to select one man, you'd have to select Theodore Roosevelt McKellar as the man who set the stage for peaceful change.
Baltimore has not always had black bus drivers, motormen. Do you remember the transition when blacks were first hired? McKeldin was responsible.
He may have been governor at the time, but I was a youngster then.
Uh-huh.
And I don't specifically remember. I remember the change. I remember the talk about what people weren't going to do. They weren't going to ride the bus. And the black man couldn't take their money, and the black man couldn't drive the bus. And, oh, I remember it vividly. Which year was that? I don't remember now.
I'm not sure
that. If that was early 50s or late 40s.
Early
50s. Well, I think he was governor in 52. Mm-hmm. So it may have come about when he became, when he was governor. Mm-hmm. Or he may have been mayor. I'm losing my time now.
He was governor from 51 to 59.
All right then. Okay.
So I guess it was then when he was governor,
yeah. But I'm sure his moral leadership had a lot to do with the change.
Now in 1968, and in their middle 60s, when the city was really torn apart,
mm-hmm.
the riots and all,
yeah.
Do you feel that McKeldin played a part in quelling the hysteria?
Well, if you recall, McKeldin was elected in 63. He was out leaving office in 68,
mm-hmm.
and we had a young mayor coming in, Tommy D'Alessandro III. And as he was going out, he could see, and he was quite concerned about it, the divisive forces that were not only in the white community, but in the black community, because blacks were becoming more militant. They're more violent. They were not interested in sitting down, talking, and mediating. And he saw this. And as an older man who had been in the forefront of racial change, he was disturbed by the violent nature that things were becoming. And I think that he got to the point that he thought that he could not cope. And I think that's why one reason why he didn't run for another term. He thought a younger man in office might be able to relate more to the young people, particularly young blacks who were coming up, who had no appreciation of what had been done in years gone by. What happened, the young man got in office and he tried to cope and meet, and they just wrecked him. The blacks were most violent and irresponsible to the young mayor. And of course, when King was assassinated, it's just the whole town just went ablaze. But at that time, the influence of the McKeldin was sort of waning. Yeah.
And in Republican party politics, do you feel that some of the positions that McKeldin took on civil rights sometimes cost him support in, you know, the Republican flanks?
Mr. McKeldin always had trouble with Republicans. Always had trouble with Republicans. Because he was a very, we use terms like liberals, but I like to use the term that he was a human being, and his concerns were for people, Republicans, Democrats, unregistered, the poor, the rich, the haves, the have-nots. That made him a statesman, and not just a politician. So he was always in trouble with the Republican Party, nationally and locally.
Do you feel that all of his detractors, you know, people who might have been his detractors, are now more or less McKeldin people, you know?
Would they be McKeldin people at this point?
Right. Do they now?
No, they've just gone further and further into the conservative ranks, more and more anti-people, anti-poor, anti-economic. And I think a lot of this, we call them Republicans, but some of them are Democrats. I think what has happened to the country is that as we've come through the civil rights years, or the decade of the 60s, there is a tendency for people to shift their influence and their thinking from being moderate liberals, caring for the poor, the downtrodden, to being a more selfish, more conservative. The blacks have made enough progress, let them pull themselves up, you know, and you don't have that feeling in the country that we ought to do a lot for poor. They've done enough for them, and now it's time for them to join the rest of us and make it on his own. I think this is the way the country has gone. And whether they're Republicans or Democrats, I think the record of the president, I think President Ford, I think the record of the Congress indicate that this country is shifting from pro-civil rights to anti-civil rights. How should I say it? They're just more conservative now. They're not concerned about a lot of things they were concerned about in the 60s.
So you feel that a leader like McKeldin then might be out of place today?
Mr. McKeldin was out of place 30 years ago. He was out of place because he was so far ahead. People never got the message. When I say people, I mean the people in leadership positions, that we can make it as one people under the fatherhood of God. We are one people, the whites, the blacks, the Jews, the Gentiles. This is the message. This is a message from the Bible, from the scripture. This is a message that America has never gotten, and it doesn't look like we want to get it. We can do it together, we as a people. So McKeldin was way ahead, and he's still ahead. I don't see that this country is going to accept the McKeldin position of one for all and all for one, and let's get on with this business of living and doing and caring for one another. They just will not get it.
Do you have any personal anecdotes about Mr. McKeldin, times when you met him, pleasant exchanges?
Everything about McKeldin was pleasant. You'd go in his office and he'd ask you how it was funeral business. I said funeral business was fine. And he'd say, "Hey, you know, you're a nice fellow. You're a fine undertaker. It seems like you would have a lot of business in the black community. You're a leader. You're aggressive. You're young. Why don't more of them call you?" Oh, he was always interested in my progress. He was always concerned that the black leadership didn't do a lot of things they should have done. He'd say to me, "Well, look, what are the black ministers doing? Why don't they get on this issue? Why don't they do something? You know, I shouldn't say this, but, you know, black people have got to do more for themselves." Uh, he did what he could, but he realized all the time that he was a white man. He also realized, too, by being closely associated with the Jewish community, they did for themselves. I don't think he ever got it together on why we as blacks didn't really look out for each other and take care of each other and do those things that he knew would make things better. I think that's the thing that a lot of people who are pro any group, you know, have difficulty in grasping, why we don't do some things that we can do for ourselves. And I think that just bothered him somewhat. McKelvin spoke at all the black churches. And he could come in 5 minutes, have them fall in the aisles. And I wish I could remember some of the things, but I know that he could get in the pulpit and just take the Jewish people out of bondage to the Red Sea and split the Red Sea and have them on the other side. By the time they got to the other side, he'd have the whole congregation in tears, in bitter tears. He had a sense of, had a spirit about him that just was phenomenal. And his whole life was an extension of his learnings, his Bible teaching. Should have been a minister, really. But he could do it to relate the Bible to what's going on today. A great guy.
You felt that perhaps his religious beliefs had a great influence on his political activities?
Yes, indeed. There's some things he just would not do. He would not do. He would not sell the taxpayers and the citizens for small personal gains for himself. He just would not do it. He just believed it wasn't right. And he lived on what he received as governor or mayor. But he was a great public speaker. So he had invitations all over the country to come speak. Of course, he was able to subsidize his small income as governor and mayor. And it worked out very, very well for him. But I remember in 1964, we were at San Francisco, at the Republican National Convention, and we were trying to get Rockefeller nominated. And the Goldwater people were in charge. And I've never seen a man visibly shaken at the tactics, the resolutions that were passed, and the whole atmosphere of Republican Convention, because he said, if this represents the thinking of people of America, then we're going to be in for some hard times. And we're in those hard times now. Terrible times. What else can we say about it? About the greatest human being in this century, Governor Theodore Roosevelt McKelvin. He was a moral leader with an unshakable commitment to justice and equality of opportunity. To his great credit and our lasting benefit, he was able to translate that commitment into public policies and programs which won the support and respect of the voters of Maryland. He was a great guy, tremendous.
And one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of the black community, do you feel that Theodore McKeldin's activities and policies that he pushed through that were of an immediate benefit to the black community have been in vain for the most part?
No. It just opened doors, and of course, once you open doors and you get people in leadership positions, you never go back. We made progress in state employment, and equal opportunity, and full participation. in government and politics to a degree that no administration can go back on. It's just that the progress that he got, that he started, has not grown to the point where all Maryland citizens are treated fairly and equally in terms of its relationship to government. Too many public jobs, state jobs that are still in the hands of the white community, and we get in slowly, very, very slowly. The governor, present governor, has a cabinet of 11 secretaries, and we had one, Secretary of Social Services and Welfare. I think that was, the gentleman's a judge now, but I don't think we have one black. You know, if McClellan was in office, there's no way we would have had less than two. But the progress that he got started, we haven't gone back, but we certainly have made the progress in this enlightened time that we should have made, because the majority community continues to say that you don't, you need any more than you have, in spite of the fact that most black people in Baltimore, Maryland, they are Democrats. They support the Democratic Party. When it comes time for jobs, job opportunities, for being in policy-making positions, we don't have them. We just don't have them. But that's Maryland. That's Baltimore. And part of it is that in business, as in government, if you don't have any leverage, you can't make progress. If every black, if 95% of black people are Democrats, then the white leadership only has to deal with a few people. But when we have some competition in government and in politics, then we might make a little progress. McClellan helped Republicans to have a little leverage. And in my instance, I serve on the Board of Supervisors Elections. Just appointed last year for another 2-year term. Only reason I'm there is because we do have a Republican Party in Baltimore, and we continue to send the governor, present governor, a list of 4 blacks to be appointed. He kept sending a list black. We kept sending a black list. We knew if we'd send one white man on the list, that white man would have been appointed. It's as simple as that. You have to have leverage, and you have to, if it's not a Republican Party versus a Democratic Party, you got to have some kind of party. And as long as blacks continue to be in one party in Baltimore City, then you're only going to get the scrapings and the crumbs from the table. But McClellan, when he was alive, he gave us the image as Republicans that we could make some progress. And as I indicated earlier, I was the first black appointed election board, Republican and Democratic town. Only because we had a mayor who was Republican, and we had a little leverage to make some inroads. But as a people, as a black people, we must keep the competitive system alive, because it's to our advantage. But without the competitive system, we will never make great inroads in Maryland.
Getting back to that speech that McKeldin made in the late 50s at Morgan, he said that if the 1970 census did not show a decrease in the crime rate, an increase in intellectual and economic advantage, that would be in the light of a, these aren't his words exactly, mm-hmm. sort of a grim warning, you know, for the black community in this country and in other parts of the world. Do you feel that the 1970 census perhaps fulfilled McKeldin's promise, fulfilled his hopes?
I think so.
Yeah.
The clouds look bad, but in every cloud there's a silver lining. Blacks can help reduce the crime rate. Blacks can raise the educational level. Blacks can do a lot of things for themselves. Matter of fact, on first Monday in February, some local black businessmen are supporting a bus to take citizens free to Annapolis to observe the General Assembly session. It's just a small thing, but 10 or 12 black businessmen, free bus, 48 people can go down to participate. That's just one thing. There are a lot of things we can do for ourselves with our own resources and our own talents. But I'm always mindful of the fact that since Roosevelt's time as president, this country has given so much. And as blacks not having, we receive food, we receive clothes, we receive the help with the New Deal. And of course, we've gotten the New Deal, we've gotten the great, with Johnson, President Johnson, the Great Society programs. And blacks have been looking toward government for everything. And now they're pretty much indoctrinated to looking for government to do everything for them. This is why we vote in a presidential election and we won't vote in a local election. Things we can do for ourselves is to have full registration of our citizens, to